Caregivers, have you ever felt like nothing? I mean, nothing is going right? Well, cheer up and welcome to Dave the Caregiver's Caregiver Radio Program, where you'll learn how to avoid that dreaded thing called caregiver burnout and how to survive the grief process. You know, with roughly 100 million caregivers in the U.S. and Canada alone, that's about a third of the population. That means that everyone probably knows someone caring for a loved one. Join Dave and his guests now and every Wednesday at noon Pacific time as they discuss avoiding caregiver burnout and surviving grief. So find a comfortable place to relax, kick up your feet, and prepare to feel better and to receive practical tips and tools that you can start using immediately to get you through today and every day so you can survive your tomorrows. But not just survive, but to live life fully and abundantly. Yes, you heard me right. That is a possible goal to achieve. And now, here's your host, Dave Nassani. And from Los Angeles, a big LA welcome to all my listeners out there in Radio Land. I'm Dave. Take a deep breath. The Caregiver's Caregiver, coming to you live globally through the worldwide Blog Talk Radio Network, as well as many other platforms. I want to just say that our goal here is to do our very best to help you caregivers out there avoid that dreaded thing called caregiver burnout. You know what that is. You might be experiencing right now, and you don't even know what it is. So stay tuned. We have an exciting show planned for you today with my lovely co-host, Adrienne Gruberg from the Caregiver Space. Say hello, Adrienne. Oh, she's muted. She'll say hello later. Today we'll
be
interviewing.
I'm here.
Okay. Today we will be interviewing the team manager at the Alzheimer's Caregiver Support page, or website actually, Kelly Minnie. Today's show is all about life after caregiving. To all of you people out there who just wish that caregiving would be over, stay tuned. And for those of you who are like so upset that caregiving is over, yes, believe it or not, there are people who are upset when caregiving stops. Stay tuned. You do not want to miss this show. We got a lot to talk about. I'm your host, Dave Nassani, and the show is the caregivers of every single kind. And the one thing we know about caregivers is that they are caring, selfless, sacrificial souls. But they have this tiny little problem. They're very prone to burnout because they tend to put everyone else's needs above their own. You know, they give and give and give. Nothing left to give. We can learn something from the airlines. I'm having trouble breathing today. I just have to keep taking all these breaths. Must be I'm not in a high altitude area. Maybe it's that LA smog they keep telling me about. Anyway, they tell us in the event of an emergency, the airlines, to put your oxygen mask on first before you attempt to help your loved one with their mask. You've heard that before, right? But why do they do that? I mean, it sounds like so selfish. That's the problem. Caregivers could use a little more selfishness in their life because they have so little of it. Anyway, can you imagine the plane going down, everyone's screaming, your bundle of joy gasping for breath? Whose mask are you going to put on, right? I mean, it's like we're not wired that way. But the airlines know that if you don't put your needs above the needs of your loved ones, you will most likely black out, and then you won't be any good with anything with anybody. That's a lot of ennies. So we also talk about grief and loss here and the devastating effects they have on us. Anytime we suffer a loss, we go through grief, and it could take days, weeks, or months. You can never get over it. But our goal here is to help you get over it. I want to take this time now to thank my last week's guest author, Dr. Mary Lake Polin, clinical professor of obstetrics at Yale University.
Ooh.
Yale, that's the adversary of Harvard, where I'm speaking this week. So I have to make sure not to mention the word Yale over there, or my alma mater, USC. Anyway, boy, I'm just very distracted today. Just a reminder, you can listen to that interview and any of our interviews right on our website, caregiverscaregiver.com. And we're so excited that my new book will be available this September. Oh my gosh, it's coming. It's really coming. And I'll let you all know when you can begin the pre-purchase process, so that we can hit all the bestsellers lists and make even a bigger splash and impact on caregiving. It's called It's My Life Too! Exclamation mark. Just pick yourself pounding your fist on the table. Reclaim your caregiver sanity by learning when to say yes and when to say no. All right, enough of that shameless plug. Hey, a big welcome to our guest, Kelly Minnie. Welcome to the show,
Hello.
Kelly, and thanks so much for agreeing to come on today. Why don't you take a minute or two and introduce yourself? I like to ask my guests just who is Kelly Minnie and why was she put on this earth?
Hello.
Yeah,
Hi.
whoa. I should have
Hello.
prepared you for that one, huh?
Yeah, what was she put on this earth? Goodness. I'm 49 years old, and I have been working very closely for over a year with caregivers that are having great difficulty taking care of their loved ones with Alzheimer's and dementia daily. I don't know if that's why I was put on this earth, but
Well, you used to be a
I
caregiver,
big time, yes.
and that was for who? Your mother and your
My
father.
mom and my dad, yeah. My mom and my dad. And at some point on the internet, on Facebook, I ran across the page Alzheimer's Caregiver Support, and there was a question someone was asking. I was like, oh, hey, wait, they really need to know this. And so I answered the person's question, and my boss, Lisa Michelle, was like, wow, that was really good. Would you mind helping out? And I was like, of course not.
Wow, after one question, huh?
One question, a big question,
Adrian,
it
that's how we
really
got to get
rings.
volunteers. One question, they're in.
One question.
Yeah,
Make it good.
it
Yeah, it was a beauty. So
tell
what'd
us
they ask
briefly.
you?
I know you went through a lot of. Oh, that's good to know. First, tell us what they asked you, what the question was, if you remember.
Someone was asking about falls. When someone falls, what and falls for attention.
How
And
to
it's
prevent
been
them?
shown, and my mother fell and broke her hip, and they've shown that the trauma from falling, the anesthesia especially, and the medications can flip Alzheimer's into a completely different stage. It can
Good to
throw it
know.
off.
Accelerated, huh? I didn't
It
know that.
accelerated bad, and so I wanted everyone to know about fall risks and how very important it is if you don't have to have surgery, if they don't absolutely have to have it, don't. Of course, it was unavoidable for hip surgery. So, but that was the question, and she needed some volunteers. And so, just kind of March of last year, I began volunteering for her.
This
And we've
take,
got about five other people that help.
you know, you've got such a compelling story. I want you to take about 5 minutes and just tell a little bit what you told me, you know, in writing. About the grief and the trials and the tribulations you went through caring for your parents in the last days. If you can
In the
do it
last
without
days,
crying, that
that's the thing.
is.
Well, I think I began by telling you I was exposed to Alzheimer's early on from my grandmother. Going to her home every summer when I was little, and all crazy old people, senility, but I knew better. I knew it was more. So I was exposed to that early on. And she passed, unfortunately. And then her only son, my uncle, passed in his 70s. And then my mother became very frightened, obviously, the predisposition. And she got the mini mental test, did great. Another mini mental test did terrible. And she knew right away. She was aware she had Alzheimer's. And
What
my
time frame
father,
between what time frame between those two tests?
I'd like to say about a year and a half. Now, obviously, the things I would see at home that were very disconcerting.
Yeah.
The mini mental test wasn't quite necessary. I mean, my mother would pull the landline off the wall just to look at the wires and things like that.
I
And
take a
she also
test
became.
every 6 months because it's a free research thing. My mother had Alzheimer's,
Yeah.
and I've always been kind of forgetful, you know, so I'm concerned if I'm at risk So every 6 months, you know, they say, well, gee, you're right under the borderline, which is, God, you know, comforting to know I'm right under the borderline, but I'm not getting any worse. So that's good. I'm doing things that, you know, supposedly fight that, like learning songs on the piano and stuff like that. But I'm sorry to interrupt.
Definitely. Yeah, my family probably should be doing that as well. Haven't really gotten around to it. As you know, we always stay busy with everybody else.
Yeah, do it.
But, yeah, it was my mother and my father. My dad had vascular dementia. He had a very bad heart, and he also suffered PTSD from World War II. So I had both of my parents at home, mom with Alzheimer's, and my dad with PTSD and vascular dementia. So that was crazy. That was insane. Was, you know, I have siblings, but they weren't helping. There was no one but myself. No in-home health care.
Yeah, you were the blessed one.
Yeah. Well, I'm the only girl. I'm the youngest. So there's the maternal instinct, and the boys, my older brothers, still take care of it, that type of thing. And they're comfortable with that, and that was fine. And my mother fell, we were talking about falls, broke her hip and went to rehab, and she never came home, unfortunately. We started the rehab, but after that, another operation, it was no longer a case of her. She wouldn't stand, even though she could. She wouldn't walk, even though she could. It was Alzheimer's, period. And so my father and I, she wound up staying in the skilled nursing facility, and my dad and I would go visit, and my dad was getting worse at home, depressed, anxious, angry, very, very angry, didn't understand why his wife wasn't there. And unfortunately, my dad got worse where to the point we would be crawling on the ground in his bedroom to get him into bed, he and I crawling. I believe he was probably over-medicated. We didn't have a very good doctor. And I'd get him and pick him up and put him into bed. And he kept falling.
And you're not that big. You're just a little thing, aren't you?
Oh, I'm 5'7". Okay. Sometimes. Yeah. But my dad was very frail. Having my mom gone, he really went downhill. And he was doing bad. And he was on blood thinners. And he fell a couple of times, and EMS came out, and he would refuse transport. And I'm thinking, oh, great, we've got a brain bleed. One of the times he fell, he finally said, okay, I'll go, let's go. And ironically and tragically enough, he wound up in the same facility as my mother. So the same place we used to go visit her, I had to leave him there.
Well, that's convenient, though.
It was convenient, and it was horrible. When I left, I think I told Dave what happened. And I don't know if that's a little bit too private to divulge, but I was extremely upset. Well, we had been visiting this place in Austin to see my mom all the time, and then when it turned out they realized he was a danger to himself, to others. They kept him, and I was like, oh my God. So I signed the admission papers, the insurance, whatnot, and a nurse I was familiar with, I just made an offhanded comment that I'm going home to this big empty house alone, no one there, they're gone, and that I wanted to hurt myself. So driving home, sure enough, I had the Austin Police Department following me, calling me on the cell phone. You can't, oh my God, completely freaking out. And they followed me all the way home until I was able to tell them, I'm okay. You know, I'm okay.
So, were you serious? Were you serious about hurting yourself? Or was that an exaggeration and something that you just said?
I think I was partially serious.
Okay.
It was that I felt so much guilt for leaving my parents. Especially since my dad had no clue. First, he's visiting there. And the next thing you know, I'm leaving him there.
Okay.
And for him trying to understand that, I mean, he was picking up wheelchairs and trying to throw them at AIDS. So it went really badly. So my dad became what they call combative, and I had to find another place, and it didn't work out. My dad was combative. And so I eventually wound up moving my parents 3 times until I was completely, they were happy with my father. They didn't consider him combative. They didn't drug him crazily. And then they were together.
It was just because he liked that place that he was not combative?
It's because of the way he was treated and medicated, or lack of, or overly medicated, and they weren't doing a good job. They just weren't. They were with my mother, but my dad was a hard case. He really was.
How long were they together there?
At the last place?
Yes.
Well, the first place only for about a couple of months. And my dad had to go back to the hospital because they had basically drugged him so heavily that he was crawling down the hallways like a baby, and they were just staring at him. So they had to take him to the hospital and take him off all the medications, baseline him, and start all over and go someplace new. So they were together. Let's see, my mom was there 2 years. My dad was there about a year. He went before she did. So what happened is the family home went into foreclosure, and I moved to an efficiency apartment about 5 minutes away from the last place they stayed, near Austin, Texas. And I got a little efficiency apartment 5 minutes away, and these people were godsends. They honestly were incredible. They took on my dad when nobody else, well, they did the right thing. I mean, they got him baseline. They just paid a lot more attention, and it wasn't like the Ritz-Carlton. Like, other places were so beautiful, but the care was so poor. And when I saw the last facility they stayed in, it was just normal-looking. It was old. It was kind of run down, and it was excellent. It was absolutely excellent. I mean, if I have to go anywhere someday, that's where I'm going.
You can't judge a book by its cover, and so many people... It's so hard to find a facility, you know, 9 out of 10 of them, you know, you wouldn't want to put your cat
horrendous.
In.
Right.
And don't always judge it by the way it looks, because it's all about the staff and the caring, et cetera.
Who's and inside?
Oh, yeah. The lobby is beautiful and the chandeliers. But then when you go into somebody's room, the chandeliers and the paintings, and the artwork and whatnot. But then when you go into a patient's room and you see someone there and nothing but a diaper and flailing around, who cares what it looks like? I couldn't care less.
Yes.
So I was fortunate enough to find them.
Well, I think we're going to take a break, and then we'll come back. We'll start asking you some questions. So don't go away.
Okay. Thank you.
One arm, one leg, 100 words. Overcoming unbelievable hardships is about Charlene, a stroke survivor. Back in 1996, Charlene was a healthy, normal, very active 52-year-old woman whose amazing talents resemble that of both a Martha Stewart and a Wonder Woman. But all that changed when she suffered a massive stroke that left her severely speech impaired and paralyzed on the right side. Who am I? My name is David. I've had the privilege of being Charlene's husband since 1975. We had a wonderful, fairy tale, storybook-like courtship that culminated in our marriage a year later. Charlene had just come out of a marriage where, after 10 years, she received 2 black eyes and a broken nose by her former husband when he came home high on speed. Charlene believed in no second chances of any kind for abuse, so she left. Finding herself all alone in the world with her 5 and 10-year-old daughters, Cynthia Lorraine and Deborah Lynn, she started raising them by herself for the next 2 years. Then fate brought us all together. After falling in love with Charlene, Cindy, and Debbie, our love then produced Rebecca Elizabeth. We had a wonderful, normal life for the next 20 years. But today, things are very different for everyone. One arm, one leg, 100 words, overcoming unbelievable hardships, is the amazing story of a woman's fight to survive all that life had thrown her way. Everyone who knows Charlene is thoroughly amazed at how she lives day by day, month by month, year by year, and with a smile on her face and hope in her heart that everything is going to be okay. Her faith in God is her foundation in this hope, that everything happens for a reason and what doesn't kill her will make her stronger. She inspires everyone who meets her. Her accomplishments since her stroke are very impressive, often making us normal people look like whiners and complainers. So pick up your copy of One Arm, One Leg, 100 Words, Overcoming Unbelievable Hardships today. You won't be disappointed. Just hear what best-selling author Lynn Barrington has to say about it. If you think you have it bad, read this book. This is a beautiful, genuine story told from the heart. It's inspiring and easy to read. When you finish this book, you'll be able to look at your concerns in a new light. How about the reaction of 9-time Grammy and Dove Award recipient, the godfather of contemporary gospel Christian music, Andre Crouch? Charlene just won't let the promises of God go, and she has not let her circumstances get in the way of her faith. She's not just a survivor, she's more than a conqueror, as the Bible states. You'll be encouraged by her testimony, regardless of what you're going through. Available everywhere, but if you purchase your copy directly from the author's website, onearmoneleg100words.com, Charlene and David will personally autograph your copy. Enjoy!
And we're back with Kelly Minnie and Adrian Gruberg. Are you still there, Kelly?
I am.
Good. I want to show everybody what you look like. So,
oh, God.
Because they're just seeing some blank avatar. There she is. Can you see? Oh, wait a minute. You can't see that yet, right? There we go. There she is. Anyway, let's get to some questions. Let me stop sharing here. I'm sorry. Such technical difficulties here.
I know.
Okay, I'll get used to this here. Okay, Kelly.
You're doing great.
Thank you for sharing all of that, because I wanted the people to understand the depth of what you went through. And Adrian, it's so common. I mean, every Alzheimer's caregiver has their own horror story.
Of course.
When you think you've heard the worst one, somebody tops it. And yours is right up there with the bad ones.
I'd really like to. How old? Pardon me. How old were your parents when they showed signs of Alzheimer's?
I'm sorry. When they passed or when they were diagnosed?
No. When they first realized that that's what was going on.
My mom was in her 70s. I believe she's okay. 75. My dad was 10 years her senior.
Okay, so it wasn't like it was early onset and it was a gigantic surprise that they needed help at that age. Okay.
Yeah, no, it was no surprise. It was just how to do it, when, how, money, you know.
I hear there are people that, some people in their 40s and 50s. Is that true, Adrian?
Yes, early onset Alzheimer's.
Oh, wow. Mm-hmm.
Terrible.
It's a thing.
It's just horrible.
So anyway, you're not a caregiver anymore, right? Are you relieved or sad or both? I mean, it depends on the person, but it's just so emotional. Some people can handle it. Some people are like lost. Tell us about your experiences when they both passed away. Obviously, I'm sure you were grief-stricken, but when did it occur to you, hey, I'm not a caregiver anymore. I don't have to do this. I have a life, and what should I do next? What did any of that go on in your head? I'm sure it did.
Oh, sure. Well, some people are comatose when they pass. Both my mother and my father were awake and lucid.
Mm.
And so when my dad passed first, you know, it was very frightening. He looked scared to death, obviously, and he died in my arms with the nurse and myself. And then my mom died in my arms. She had trouble swallowing. You know, everything shuts down. So both of them passed with me, and they were both lucid, so it wasn't like they were comatose. So that was horrendous. Really hit me after the funerals. Because there was so much to do. My dad was in the military. There were military honors to set up. There were flag folding ceremonies. There were there was so much to take care of. You know, are we going to be able to save a house? And, probate, all kinds of issues. And it's after my mom's funeral, it was like, now what? Oh my God, everything's done. Everything's finished.
Yep.
And that's when I was just like in a black hole. Absolutely nothing left to do. No more funerals, no more memorials, nothing. So that's, I was not relieved. I was relieved for them because they knew they were suffering. They wanted to eat. They couldn't eat. My dad wanted strawberry ice cream. He couldn't swallow the strawberry ice cream. And that was really hard trying to get them to eat without any difficulty. So I was relieved for them not having to go see that anymore. But myself, no. I would take them back in a second, but not like that. Not like that. Yeah, the sadness, you had talked about anticipatory grief. I don't, never really learned what that was because I haven't really had time. I knew I would grieve, and I've grieved before for other reasons, but it's a different kind of grief. You know, there's guilt. I could have done more.
Of course.
There's anger. There's resentment. You know, why didn't so-and-so help me, or why did they do this to me? So the anticipatory grief, I wasn't really prepared for it, no. Not until after the funerals.
But you did know that there was a likelihood that this this was going to happen, did you not?
Yes. Yeah, I did. And it was crazy. Some days they'd tell me, oh, they're doing better. And part of me would say, oh, they're getting better. And then I'd stop and think, remember, it's Alzheimer's. They don't get better. They'll have better days.
I mean, it's my feeling that when an intelligent person is caring for an Alzheimer's patient or two, that you have to be aware of slowly losing the person that you know, and that part of it is a grief process as well. Every little bit that disappears seems to me to be a little bit of the grief process. Did you start missing different things and start regretting the loss of those things? So see, that is what other people might call anticipatory grief. Seeing what's coming.
Yeah, things like when I would get ill or I'd get the flu or get a cold or something.
Right.
You know, mom's not here. Mom can't take care of me. you know, somebody really has pissed me off, and I want to tell my dad about it. My dad was a very proud Italian man, very loyal military man. And I'm like, oh, tell my dad. But I couldn't. And little things, big things, every little thing. And I was their parent at home, and then, of course, I volunteered where they were. So it was hell being their parent.
Did they
but
know you?
I wouldn't
you?
Say that for anything.
Did they know you until the end?
Yes, my father did, remembering he had vascular dementia.
Yes,
my
okay.
mom, towards the end, I'm not so sure, like on my birthday or her birthday, she was, oh, I have to thank God for this, the most pleasant person. I don't think she knew a lot of the times towards the end. She'd just say, oh, hi, sweetheart. Oh, you look pretty. Hi, sweetheart. I don't really know if she knew who I was or not, but I just knew her personality. I think deep in her heart, you just can't kill it all off. I know they can't. I think she knew it was me. But she knew for many, many, many months when she was in school nursing that it was me.
Yeah.
And when she declined a little bit, it would be, hi, sweetheart. Like, she'd talk to anybody.
Right.
The staff or other residents. It's the sweetest thing in the world, thank God. Because I don't know how I would have dealt with my poor uncle, who was not like that. He was his personality changed completely. And I don't know how I would have dealt with something like that. So I'm lucky in that sense.
Mm-hmm. Can't hear you, Dave.
No.
Your mic, you were muted.
So tell us about what you thought about the future. When did you start thinking, okay, I've got to get on with my life. I'm not a caregiver anymore. You know, should I go back to school? Should I get a job? Should I do what? Now, were you married and you have kids and all of that?
No, no children. I was not married. I'm not married. And after the funerals, it became a matter of, you know, they had businesses in the past, restaurants, mm-hmm. and home. And so it was like logistics now, the house, and we've got lawyers to talk to and this and that.
So they had realized, a lot of stuff. Oh my God,
I still do. I mean, 5 years mm-hmm. later, we still have a house that's still in foreclosure. It's craziness.
Wow.
yeah.
The businesses, you have restaurants too?
Oh, yeah. He had retired from those, though, before they got so sick. He had several restaurants. And we were all over the country. We moved a lot. And again, I was a military brat, so not being married, not having children.
Doing okay? Doing okay financially?
Oh, no. No, I did not go back to work, actually. I have been thrown on the idea of being a CNA because the CNAs, the Certified Nursing Assistants, did so much for my mom and dad and for all the residents I saw. They were amazing. And I've talked to my family about taking classes or even an activities director because I noticed they didn't have a whole lot of activities that they could have, like art, music. And my family, no, it's not healthy for you. Oh, it'll be terrible for you. Oh, you can't handle it. That type of thing. So my future was I'm going to do what they did for them. And everybody disagrees. It's kind of funny. They don't seem to think that would be a good thing for me to do.
Yeah.
But if I didn't think it was, I wouldn't be volunteering daily online. So that is still, that's a possibility, being a CNA. Because we know they're very understaffed.
When did you realize that you had a future in caring for caregivers?
A future?
That is what you do, right?
Yeah, through Lisa and Michelle. That one question, and I don't know if somebody was able to prevent a fall or whatnot, but Lisa was just overloaded. We've got 8,900 people. Mm. Daily following and Instagram now and Twitter, and it's online, but as you know, it's extremely important because 24/7 we'll get a private message. I'm caring for somebody, they won't go to the doctor. This person's wandering, this person's calling me names, this person's dangerous, this person won't stop crying. A myriad of things. And so I just jumped in as a volunteer. And this was March of last year. And so I thought, since I'm not working and I'm kind of in between where I want to live, I can give back. And this is how I'm going to be able to give back. Somebody needs me. I'm going to be there as much as I can. I'm going to share as much information as I can so they don't have to be as lost as I was. Because I was like, I sure could have used that group and you and caregiver support. And caregiver space. I'm sorry. I could have used all of that tremendously in a 36-hour book. And your book, all these things I know now, I have no idea.
Also, so now we can help others not have to go through the grief that we went through.
Right.
Because, yeah.
I mean, it's very much a learning process, and it's a growth process based on what's available on the internet, how easy they make it for you to do, and there's so much information out there now. You just have to sort of find the best and truest fit for yourself, because it's not always a good fit.
Not everyone is doing it out of love. I'm sure there's people out there doing it for money or whatever, you know.
Definitely.
They're just.
That's crazy.
I can understand that someone who has made themselves a caregiving coach and has made a career out of it and is known for it, rather than just opportunistically doing it and preying on people who need it, that there are people who've seen the need for many, many, many years and really do have something to offer, even though they get paid for it. But you get more out of it.
And, you know, I spend an awful lot of money, which I can no longer do. And I know Adrian spends a lot of money on these sites. These things aren't free. You know, we're not only giving our time, but we're shelling out bucks. And I'm in the process of monetizing my website, letting it become a membership site. So just because someone is charging you to get information, you know, that's not necessarily a bad thing. I mean, they've got to eat. They've got to do it. Otherwise, they're just going to shut down and then they go away. So I would encourage caregivers to support, you know, these groups like mine, like Adrian's, like
Lisa's. I think sponsors are good.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm looking for sponsors, if you know any. I know that part of my mission was to keep the space ad free, because I wanted caregivers to have a place to go where they weren't being bombarded with ads for what the patient needed. I wanted it to be a place where the caregiver could go and they were not assaulted with things that were patient-centric. And I've always been all about the caregiver. So
it really throws them for a loop, because I have a gentleman coming from England and wanting to know, how can I keep my wife from turning on the lever on the faucet? Ooh. And we think, oh my God, send us a picture. What does it look like in England? And we can show you something to put on the lever.
Right.
And we don't get the pictures back. So we Google and we talk to people in England. Hey, do you happen to know, because the poor gentleman, of course, the 8-hour time difference doesn't help. So it's a 24/7 website online. And right now, we're going to be having a brand new website. We just did a YouTube video for the Walk to End Alzheimer's YouTube video that our Melissa put together.
Are you, is your membership international? I mean, we've got people from Australia, the Philippines, England, South Africa, mostly English-speaking countries, but lately I've been getting people from further reaches.
Malaysia.
Gotten feedback from people from that distant place?
Well, we put out a call for bloggers and for volunteers. Mm-hmm. And amazingly enough, almost all of them, except for a couple, one was from Belize, one was from Portugal, not as far out as the Philippines, but none of them were from America. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, we really couldn't work all together with that kind of volunteership because of the language barrier. That was a big deal. But we do have Lily Torres, who is our Hispanic speaking and English speaking, and we also have Chris Marie, and they're both there for our Hispanic speaking caregivers. And they've been doing things all in Spanish, which we think is really cool.
That's a blessing.
And I'm doing a guest blog. I'm from America.
Yes, you are doing a guest blog next month. We've got that going for you. Can't wait to do that. We just started doing events like that. Guest blogging is brand new to us. We just had a woman from Revolution. They do the bracelets and the charity, total charity donation for Hilarity for Charity, and the Women's Alzheimer's Movement and Part of the Cloud. They just did our first guest blog. And then we have an author coming on, and then we have another author, Dave, coming on very soon. So lots of new stuff that
uncharted territory.
Correct. We are getting into heavily next month, so we'll see how that goes.
Does it feel full of new ideas, constantly changing?
Well, it's becoming such an epidemic. It's a huge epidemic.
Yeah, of course.
The statistics are absolutely petrifying. They scare me to death. And so every day we just want to put more into it and more into it about awareness and research, because this is going to get bad.
Yep.
you know this. This is going to get, I don't know what's going to happen. What is it, 2050? It's supposed to triple.
It's supposed to triple.
Yeah, by 2050 and 2025 is the goal for a cure. And if you look at all that, it's mind-boggling. It's like, how is this going to get done?
And it's like, how are you going to, I can certainly see curing a particular type of something or other. Like, they might find a cure for
Lewy body.
Let's say Lewy body or a particular kind of cancer. They might be able to find one cure, but then it mushrooms into all the other categories. And staying on top of it is a major deal. And it's good that the baby boomers are in a position right now to fund the research a little better than before.
Yeah, I like the hilarity of charity for millennials, quote unquote. Mm-hmm. That's great. We really need that because of the early onset. And it's terrifying. It really is, and that's why we're doing what we're doing. Each of us has a different role in caring for caregivers online, but we're all there for anything. Doesn't matter what time, somebody's got to be there.
Yeah.
Someone's got to be there.
Well, let's take a break, and then we'll continue on our questions. So we'll be right back. Don't go away.
Anytime we suffer loss, we grieve. And a lot of people don't realize what even the grief process is. But it could be 5 to 7 steps ranging from denial, I don't believe this is happening, anger, oh my gosh, I'm so upset this is happening, to a form of bargaining, how can I get out of this, to depression, which is a very serious thing because that often leads to suicide. And then finally, after you realize you have no more control over your situation and you're totally okay with the new normal that it brings, that wonderful, wonderful place called acceptance.
Being a caregiver takes a special person with passion and compassion. But even you can become a little burned out from time to time. The Caregiver's Caregiver Radio Show was developed to help you overcome obstacles, adversity, and burnout, as well as just having a place to rest, relax, and recharge your batteries. We've all been there, and you're not alone. Now, you can take the Caregiver's Caregiver with you. Get the top 25 radio shows in convenient form that plugs right into your USB car stereo or computer. Learn the techniques, tips, and encouragement we all need to better handle the day-to-day challenges. For around $1 per show, just $29.77, get the credit card-sized USB card to have with you anytime you need a caregiver's pick-me-up. Just go to DaveTheCaregiversCaregiver.com and order yours today. Go to DaveTheCaregiversCaregiver.com now. Consider it an investment in you, and ultimately, an investment in them.
And we're back with Kelly Minney and Adrian Gruberg. Oh boy, such a depressing topic, but we gotta plow through it. What advice would you give caregivers about that day when they're no longer needed by their loved ones? They might be in the midst of where you were when it was your darkest hour. They might be going through the grief process when they just lost them, or they might be in the aftermath. What do you wish you can tell them that you wish you knew now that you're so wise?
Oh, God, I wouldn't say that. Most definitely.
Pretend like you're talking to yourself back then.
Wow. Definitely to take care of and to realize what you're feeling. Very gentle with yourself. It sounds crazy. Congratulate yourself for what you've done. Don't beat yourself up. A lot of people don't get near this. They're too afraid. You've got to be proud of yourself, of what you've done. And you've got to know that your loved ones are proud of you. if you believe in that type of thing, afterlife, and to go slow, you know, to go slow and to reach out, don't isolate, don't think about all of the terrible parts of what you went through. Try very, very hard to hang on to the great parts, you know, even when they were in the midst of Alzheimer's, when they were laughing or when some miraculous comment would come out, hang on to that, because that was them. That was really them. The bad parts, that was not them. So it's a long journey. It's a long journey, but when you're feeling that desolate and that desperate, you have got to be gentle with yourself, because it can get bad. It really can. You will, you know, run into hints of depression and not taking care of yourself, and like you've said before, get sick. And a lot of people, they don't do that, and they can't do that, and it takes a long time. But it's necessary. You've just got to really love yourself for what you've done. And you know, you've got to know you did the best you could. That's all you can do.
Yeah.
That's all you
Nobody can
do.
Nobody can ask more. Yeah. You do the best you can do. And if you have this hindsight 2020, well, I could have done this, or I should have done that. That's bullocks. It's total bullocks, because it's done. It's over.
I mean,
it's done. You did your best.
I mean, you have to think about, I mean, my husband had cancer, and I know that there are a lot of different protocols now than there were 6 years ago when he passed away. So, you know, there are people around me who are angry about the fact that Steve hadn't lived longer, yeah, because you can't go back. This is the way it was 6 years ago. No matter what the illness was, yes, there's been progress made. You can be aware of what progress has been made, but it is what it is while you're going through it. And you can't think about all of the woulda, shoulda, couldas, because this was how you had to deal with it in the moment.
Yep.
It sounds like you did pretty well.
I think so. I mean, I could have, you go with it. I could have done better, and I could have, but I did my best. And they passed peacefully. I'd like to say, and now is an opportunity for really everybody to get on the ball and get rid of this somehow. That is my thing. I want to see a survivor in my lifetime. I'm 49 years old. I want to see a survivor. I think we all do.
Sorry, my chair is so squeaky. I keep oiling it, and it just doesn't help.
Someone sent me an article yesterday on a site called Medscape. I believe that it's mostly British articles from The Lancet, but there are the top stories you need to know today. And the one that really got me is 1/3 of dementia may be preventative with lifestyle change. And it's not difficult change.
Mm-mm.
And if people looked at, if 30-year-olds looked at this, even 40, 45-year-olds looked at this, they could make changes in their lives and be, you know, they could change what their future, they have a chance to change what their future might be. I'm living a healthy life now. I can't go back to the way it was before. Don't know how I'm going to end up, but I'm certainly staying aware of everything that's coming down the pike with Alzheimer's and dementia. There's a lot of it.
You look very fit and healthy, Adrienne.
Yeah, I look, rickety and
old. I think stress is a huge deal. I think stress has a lot to do with it. I really do, because it's your brain. Your brain is being just totally bombarded with stress and worry, and that cannot help.
No, and
vegging in front of the TV doesn't help that. Being inactive, being a participant.
Yeah. I mean, they certainly say that to counteract the depression, there should be a lot of activity and involvement with other people is a huge part. But the number one thing on their list for ways to prevent dementia is hearing loss needs to be dealt with at a young age, because people become very isolated if they can't hear what's going on. And they'll, because vanity will keep them from dealing with it. So I'm having my hearing checked in 2 weeks.
No, it's very true. Social isolation is detrimental. It really is.
Terrible.
I mean, my mom used to do the books, all the book work for the restaurants and crossword puzzles. She'd fly through a crossword puzzle. Mm-hmm. And she's
jigsaw
so
puzzles.
Smart. Yeah.
I mean, mental activity is wonderful, but their physical closeness with other human beings. You know, I mean, whether it's as we do virtually or, you know, belonging to different groups, which I know Dave does. But I have to start joining some groups to be around more and more and more people. It's very important to just look at every new thing on the horizon for Alzheimer's.
Anything and everything, honestly. Diet, exercise.
Yep.
Socializing is, I'm optimistic.
Do you think you're taking good care of yourself?
No.
Put yourself on the top of your agenda of things to do.
Well,
do things for you.
Taking care of myself, I enjoy what I do so very much. And doing it in person, I mean, especially going back to the same place, and volunteering or becoming an activities director or a CNA, the fulfillment in that, it's going to be like doing it all over again, but for strangers that really need it because they're so understaffed. So that to me is taking care of myself, which is kind of contradictory, you know.
Well, you have
not really doing things for me.
Do you feel that going back to the same place is the best thing for you, or would you be better off volunteering services at another place? Have you given that any thought?
It would completely depend on how they treat their patients.
Right.
Because I would be one of those guys that would be like, oh, see ya. You know, beautiful chandelier in the lobby, beautiful artwork, I'm gone.
Quality of care.
Yeah, it would depend on the people I was working with, most definitely.
Mm-hmm. Now, obviously, you're working with Lisa and her group, and that's helping a lot of people, and that's the great part. But what does it do for you? And would you encourage other people to get involved? Is it therapeutic?
Very. Very therapeutic. Things that I wondered about before and never knew, now I know. Mm-hmm. I don't have to sit there and go, God, what about that? I'm constantly learning, and it is very fulfilling. When someone says, thank you so much, I'll try that, or that worked, you know, we distracted, we deflected, we did this, whatever techniques, and it worked, thank you. And you can get offline and go, that is so cool. And then if they come back the next day with something else, they trust you, you know, you're really doing something, because somewhere on the other end of that line, something good is happening. But it does get frustrating when I think the top thing is when people can't get their loved ones to a doctor, they just cannot get them to go to the doctor. Then you get really frustrated because there's nothing you can do. So it's a precarious balance. And I would definitely encourage people to get into helping other caregivers. It's going to help you. It's really going to help you.
Right. That's right. Hey, Kelly, I don't know what else I'd be doing. I can't believe how fast this hour has gone. We need to wrap it up. And let's, how can someone get a hold of you or someone at the group if they have questions or they just want to talk? I mean, is that allowed if somebody just wants to vent and get things off their chest? How do they do that?
Most, they go to the Alzheimer's Caregiver Support page on Facebook and they private message us.
And they'll get an answer like in 24 hours usually?
Faster than that. Now that we've got such great volunteers, usually within a couple of hours.
Wow.
So that's private messenger on Facebook, on our Facebook page. I'm even willing to give out my email address. You know, whatever helps, and I can do that as well.
Yeah. I think I need more volunteers, Adrian, because
I need more volunteers.
I have one virtual assistant, and it's still a lot of work for me, you know, answering people. I don't want to wait more than 20. I don't want to wait more than 12 hours to answer people.
It took a long time to get this way. Lisa put out a call for volunteers, and, you know, you've got to vet the volunteers. You've got to profile the volunteers. And
But you can watch the people who interact the most and are always there, always answering the questions. They're likely candidates, aren't they?
Exactly. That's exactly what we went through when we're there.
How do you vet them?
Questions. You know, tell us a little bit more about your caregiving experience. Mm. What would you do in this instance, that instance? Mm. Their answers. It's like interviewing for a job. It's just like interviewing. It is a job.
Yeah.
And their payment is satisfaction and wonderful feelings of doing good, yes?
Yes. And we're hearing that our volunteers are so much happier than they were before, and that means a lot to me.
It should.
Cool. Well, Adrian, how can listeners reach you?
Adrian, ADRIENNE, at the caregiver. space.org is my email, and the Caregiver Space Facebook page, thecaregiverspace.org is the web page. Lots of ways to get in touch with us.
Fantastic.
Great. And again, a reminder, all our live shows become recorded pod and videocasts on our website, caregiverscaregiver.com, or if it's easier to remember, DaveTheCaregiver.com or DaveTheCaregivers.com. Anything will practically get you there. No. So while you're there, take a short quiz to see if you're a candidate for burnout. And if you don't realize you are, that's pretty common, because that's called denial. Because about 99% of caregivers out there are in some form of burnout. They just don't know it. So just for doing that, I'm going to send you my first book, absolutely free, $10 value, still getting rave reviews, One Arm, One Leg, 100 Words, Overcoming Unbelievable Hardships, about my wife's amazing story of surviving a devastating stroke. Anyway, Doctor, Adrian and Kelly and everyone listening, thank you again. So until next Wednesday at noon, bye-bye.
Thank you for joining Dave, the Caregiver's Caregiver Radio Show. Make sure you tune in every Wednesday at noon Pacific Time and anytime afterwards on podcast to catch more of Dave and his tips to caregivers on avoiding burnout and surviving the grief process right here on the Worldwide Block Talk Radio Network. Goodbye.